you're standing in a room that looks mostly finished, but there's that one glaring gap where the floor meets the wall. It's the visual handshake of a home. The transition that tells everyone whether the person who built this cared about the details or was just trying to get to dinner. Baseboards seem simple enough until you're staring at a crooked corner or a gap wide enough to swallow a dime. And that's when most people start reaching for the wood filler and hoping for the best. We aren't going to do that today. We're going to walk through this together so that when you're done, those lines are crisp, the joints are tight, and you won't feel the need to hide your work behind a strategically placed potted plant. Before we even pick up a pry bar, we have to understand what we're actually trying to achieve here. Baseboards aren't just decorative strips of wood or MDF. They're the literal seal of your room's perimeter. They hide the expansion gap that every floor needs to breathe, and they protect your drywall from the inevitable vacuum cleaner or wandering toe. When you look at a professional job, you don't see the nails, and you certainly don't see the jagged edges of a bad cut. You see a continuous flowing line that frames the room. To get there, we have to respect the house, because I can promise you right now that your walls aren't straight and your floors aren't level. Houses settle and shift, and if you go into this expecting perfect 90-degree angles, you're going to be frustrated within the first 20 minutes. I learned that lesson the hard way years ago. I was working on a small guest bedroom, feeling pretty confident because I just bought a brand new miter saw. I measured the back wall, walked out to the garage, and cut two pieces at exactly 45 degrees. I didn't even bother to check the corner with a square, because in my head, corners are supposed to be 90 degrees. I brought the boards back in, slapped them against the wall, and there was a gap at the top of the joint, big enough to see the wall studs through. I tried to force it by nailing the life out of it, which only ended up splitting the wood and leaving me with a mess of splinters and a bruised ego. I had to rip the whole thing out, go back to the lumberyard, and buy more material. That mistake taught me that we don't cut for the way the room should be. We cut for the way the room actually is. You have to listen to the house. To start this process, we need to gather our tools. But we're gonna do it with a focus on finesse rather than brute force. You'll want a sharp utility knife, a thin profile pry bar, sometimes called a wonder bar, and a scrap piece of wood to use as a spacer. The utility knife is actually the most important tool in the first stage. If you just shove a pry bar behind your old baseboards, you're going to rip the paper right off your drywall. And then you've just traded a baseboard project for a drywall repair project. We want to avoid that. You'll also need your new material, a miter saw, a finishing nailer, either pneumatic or cordless, and a simple tool called a protractor or an angle finder. If you don't have one, don't worry, I'll show you how to work around it. We begin by scoring the bead of caulk along the top of the existing baseboard. You take that utility knife and run it firmly but carefully along the seam where the wood meets the wall. You aren't trying to cut through the wall, you're just breaking the bond of the old paint and caulk. You'll feel a slight resistance, a sort of dragging sensation, as the blade slices through that rubbery layer. Once that's done all the way around the room, you can take your pry bar. Now here is the secret to keeping your walls intact. Never pry directly against the drywall. Find a stud. You can usually tell where they are by looking for the nail heads in the old baseboard, and slide your pry bar in. Place that scrap piece of wood between the back of the pry bar and the wall. This distributes the pressure so you don't punch a hole in the plaster. Give it a gentle tap with a hammer, and you'll hear a satisfying pop as the nails start to let go. Work your way down the length of the board slowly. If you feel too much tension, stop and check if there's a hidden nail holding things up. Once the old boards are off, you'll see a line of old caulk and maybe some dust bunnies that haven't seen the light of day in a decade. Take a stiff putty knife and scrape that wall clean. you want a flat surface for your new boards to sit against. Any little bump or leftover nail fragment will push your new baseboard out and ruin your alignment. While you're down there, take a pencil and mark the locations of the wall studs on the floor. It's much easier to see them now than it will be when you have a piece of wood covering them up. Just a small tick mark on the subfloor or the edge of the finished flooring will save you from firing nails into nothingness later on. Now we get to the part that makes or breaks the job: measuring and cutting. We always start on the longest, straightest wall in the room. This gives us a solid foundation to work from. When you measure, don't just pull the tape and guess. Push the hook of the tape firmly into one corner and pull it tight to the next. If the distance is longer than your tape, mark a spot at exactly 100 inches, then measure from that mark to the other end. Accuracy here is the difference between a tight fit and a piece of wood that rattles. When you get to the corners, you have two choices: miter or cope. A miter is where you cut both boards at an angle, usually 45 degrees, and join them. A cope is where you run one board straight into the corner and then cut the profile of the second board to fit over the first one like a puzzle piece. For a beginner, miters are tempting because they seem easier, but I'm going to encourage you to try a miter with a slight adjustment. Remember how I told you corners aren't 90 degrees? This is where your angle finder comes in. If you find the corner is actually 89 degrees, you're going to set your saw to 44 and a half. It sounds like a tiny difference, but in the world of finished carpentry, a half degree is a mile. As you move to the saw, remember that the blade has a thickness, which we call the kerf. If you line your blade up directly on your pencil mark, you're going to end up with a board that is about an eighth of an inch too short. Always line the blade up on the waist side of the line. You'll feel the vibration of the saw through the handle as it bites into the wood. Hold the board firmly against the fence. If it slips even a fraction, your angle will be off. I like to dry fit every piece before I ever reach for the nail gun. Put the board in place, see how it sits. If it's a hair too long, you can take it back to the saw and shave the whiskers off. Just a tiny paper-thin slice to get that perfect friction fit. When you're happy with the fit, it's time to nail. We're using 2-inch finish nails for most standard baseboards. Position the board, ensuring it's tight against the floor. You might have to put some downward pressure on it if your floor has a dip. This is where those marks you made on the floor earlier become your best friend. Line your nailer up with the mark. Hold the tool perpendicular to the wall and squeeze the trigger. You'll hear a quick thump hiss as the nail sinks home. You want the head of the nail to be just slightly below the surface of the wood. Most modern nailers have a depth adjustment dial. Test it on a scrap piece first, so you aren't blowing holes all the way through your trim or leaving nails sticking out like silver thorns. Space your nails about 16 inches apart, hitting every stud. If you find a spot where the wall bows inward and leaves a gap behind the board, don't try to pull the wall to the wood. You have to pull the wood to the wall. Drive a nail at an angle to catch the bottom plate of the wall framing. You'll see the wood slowly pull back and close that gap. It's a bit like magic when you see a stubborn piece of trim finally snap into obedience. As you work your way around the room, you'll eventually come to a doorway or an outside corner, a corner that points out into the room rather than into the wall. These are actually easier to get right because you can see both sides of the joint clearly. For an outside corner, you want to cut your pieces just a tiny bit long, maybe a 16th of an inch. When you bring them together, the long fit will force the front edges to meet tightly. I like to use a little bit of wood glue on these joints. Just a small dab on the mitered face will keep the joint from opening up when the humidity changes in the house. If the joint is being stubborn, you can use a piece of painter's tape to pull the two pieces together while the glue dries. You might be thinking that once the nails are in, you're finished. but the final 5% of the job is what creates the clean look we're after. This is the finishing stage. You'll have a series of small nail holes and the seams in the corners. Take a high-quality wood filler, one that doesn't shrink too much, and press it into the nail holes with your finger. You want a little mound of filler sticking out, because as it dries, it will pull inward. Once it's bone dry, give it a light sand with a fine grit sandpaper, maybe 220 grit. You'll feel the surface go from rough to buttery smooth. When you run your hand over it, you shouldn't be able to tell where the hole was. Next comes the caulk. This is the part people usually rush, and it's the part that shows the most. Use a paintable acrylic caulk with silicone. Cut the tip of the tube at a very sharp angle, making the hole much smaller than you think you need. A small bead is easier to control than a big, messy glob. Run a continuous line along the top of the baseboard where it meets the wall. Now here is the pro tip. Keep a damp rag and a bucket of water nearby. Wet your finger and lightly drag it along the caulk line. You aren't trying to wipe the caulk away. You're just pressing it into the crack and smoothing the surface. Wipe your finger on the rag frequently. If you see caulk building up on your skin, you're using too much pressure. What you want is a perfectly smooth concave transition that looks like the wood grew right out of the drywall. If you have a gap between the baseboard and the floor, maybe you have hardwood or tile that isn't perfectly level, you can add a piece of shoe molding or quarter round. This is a smaller, flexible strip of wood that sits at the base. It follows the contours of the floor while the baseboard stays level. You install it the same way, with small nails driven into the baseboard itself, not the floor. The floor needs to be able to slide underneath it as the seasons change. As you stand back and look at your work, you'll notice how the room feels more buttoned up. The shadows that used to live in the corners are gone. The lines are sharp. It's a quiet kind of satisfaction. The realization that you've taken a series of imperfect angles and forced them into a cohesive, beautiful frame. You didn't just slap wood on a wall. You understood the physics of the house and worked with it. The final step, and one people often skip, is the paint touch-up. Even if your baseboards came pre-painted, you've put holes in them and covered them with caulk. Take a small trim brush and go over those filled nail holes and the caulk line. When the paint dries, it will hide the filler and the caulk, leaving you with a surface that looks like a single, solid piece of craftsmanship. I remember finishing that guest room after my first disaster. The second time around, I took it slow. I measured twice, I checked my angles, and I didn't rush the caulk. When I finally pulled the blue tape off the floor and stepped back, I realized that the house hadn't changed. It was still crooked and old, but my approach had. I had stopped fighting the house and started listening to it. That's the torque in the work. It's knowing just how much pressure to apply and when to let the material find its own way. They're probably a little dusty, maybe a little sore from being on your knees all day, but they just built something that will stand for as long as this house does. Every time you walk into this room, your eye will catch that crisp corner or that smooth run along the long wall, and you'll know exactly what it took to get it that way. You'll know it wasn't luck. It was patience, a few smart cuts, and the willingness to do it right instead of just doing it fast.